Welcome to Innovating Leadership, Co-creating Our Future, where we explore the practices, mindsets, and systems that help leaders navigate complexity and create sustainable impact. I'm your host, Maureen Metcalf, CEO and founder of the Innovative Leadership Institute. Today, I'm delighted to be joined by Howard Hochhauser, CEO of Ancestry.com, a company operating at a fascinating intersection of technology, identity, history, and human connection. Ancestry has become a trusted steward of millions of family stories while leveraging advanced AI to deepen meaning, not distance us from it. So, Howard, welcome.
I am glad to be here. Looking forward to it.
I am as well. I want to learn more about you. So you've held senior leadership roles across high-growth and mission-driven organizations. Looking back, what experiences most shaped how you lead today?
You are the sum total of your experiences. I've been fortunate. I've worked with some phenomenal leaders and phenomenal entrepreneurs. I'll start out with my dad, actually, who started a business with his father in Brooklyn, New York. I'm from New York originally. And so he, like, classic American success story, didn't go to college. I think he just graduated high school and went on to create and start with his father a business in Brooklyn and expanded out to Long Island and grew up with that family business, the customers, everything, the urgency, the passion around the kitchen table. And so that really stayed with me. And then fast forward, went to college, and after that, worked on Wall Street, worked for this guy, Ace Greenberg, who was one of the last true entrepreneurs. He was the CEO of Bear Stearns, a real legacy on Wall Street, sat on the trading desk. And it was his culture that drove Bear Stearns and made it what it is. And from Bear Stearns, then I went to Martha Stewart, another just like passionate founder, authentic entrepreneur who really, like her, Ace, my dad, deep passion for their customers, deep passion for doing what's right, passion for growth, growing their businesses, doing it profitably. And it stuck with me. It really stuck with me. So I was, yeah, really was fortunate, blessed to have worked with all three of them. Obviously, love my dad, but Martha, fantastic. And she's still doing it today.
All of them have a clear sense of purpose, as you've said. And so now let's tie that to you. What is your core purpose that guides you when you have to make difficult decisions, which I assume you're doing pretty consistently right now?
You have to make trade-offs all the time, right? You can't make everybody happy. There are hard choices you need to make in service of moving the company forward. I remember my dad, his customers were some of the neighbors that we grew up with, and you had to prioritize choices among your neighborhood, among your neighbors. And likewise today, right, we're trying to grow the company. And so there are trade-offs that we need to make. What I do is, as a North Star, put my family, as my mother, as a customer, which she is, and think, what would my mother think if we do X, Y, or Z, if we're raising price, changing a package, adding a content collection, adding a new feature? Because it really is, it's a consumer service. We have almost 4 million customers. The demographic is someone who tends to be female, over 55. And so my mom, my family fits into the demo. So it's easy just to make that my North Star and make sure that I'm not going to disappoint her.
How cool. I'm just imagining a picture of your mother on your desk and you imagining her having a conversation with you.
I need to balance that picture. Yeah, I need to balance that picture with the picture of Blackstone, who owns the company. Yeah, we're trying to do both at the same time. And we've been successful in doing that. Last year, we returned the business to growth for the first time in 4 years, had a great year. Also, while we drove subscription revenue growth, we drove improvements in customer satisfaction, which had been declining for 3 years. We turned that around, and now we put up 13 months of improvements in customer satisfaction, NPS, up 13% last year. So you can do both. Not always easy, but it's possible.
So tell us a little bit about what happened to make that possible, because I think a lot of listeners are striving to do exactly that.
I believe we strayed away when the company sort of was eroding and profits and growth had flattened and NPS was going down. We stopped listening to our core customer and we're going off in a different direction of we of what we thought they would want, what we thought a different demographic would want. And frankly, one of the first things I did when I became CEO was just, I had been at the company, this is my 18th year at the company. I know our customers really well. I'm a customer, I'm in our demo, my mom's in the demo. Really just listen to our customers. They want content, they want better search, better hints. So it went around and just listened to what our base wants and started delivering it for them. And again, we did that. I would say our employees cheered louder than anybody. They loved that idea. And now we put customers at the center of our culture statement. But we did that. And again, revenue turned around and so did NPS.
What did that mean? Almost everyone says customers are at the center of their culture.
Yeah.
And yet a lot of people don't deliver on that. So what changed to be able to deliver on it and elevate your NPS and profitability at the same time?
Yeah, fair questions. I would say they would try to boil the ocean. I want to focus on my 25-year-old customer, the 55, 75-year-old customer of all different demographics. Most of our customers are 55 and over, baby boomer demographic, which is the fastest growing demographic in the U.S. and a disproportionate amount of the wealth in the U.S. is tied up in that demo. So we focused in on a segment, not the entire customer base, but on a segment of the customer base. And what they wanted was, as I mentioned, better core functionality, which for us is ultimately surface the content in a more meaningful, faster, easier, more accurate way. And that's what we did. And we also, importantly, took away some of the features that we had built over the past 3 years, which were just a distraction, were getting in the way of our customers. And so when I told the engineering team, we're refocusing and take away all this stuff that we built, they did it over a weekend. They were so excited about it.
Why were they excited about taking away functionality?
They knew that our base just didn't like that, what we were providing, that we were trying to force our customers to go in a direction that they didn't want to go. It wasn't in service of our core mission, which also one of the first things that I did was change our mission statement. So everybody knew the direction of the company. And so today, the mission is we help everyone, underscore everyone, discover, preserve, and share their family stories. And so it made it about clear as day. It's about family stories. It's not just about finding my grandfather's draft card. It's about what's the story around the draft card? What was his service like? When did he get shipped overseas? Where did he serve? Who did he serve with? Was he wounded? Did he get a medal? So it's really about all the stories that surround just that first record, just that draft card. Prior to that, our mission statement was we empower journeys or personal discovery. You could have that for a yoga studio. You could have that for a health company. And yes, you could have that for a family history company. It goes into this magic word called focus, right? By focusing the mission, we focused the company, focused on our customer. And now we're very focused on family stories.
And so how do you help people? I'm just thinking, when my father was alive, he was an Ancestry customer. And as he was declining in his capability, I would sit down with him and go through what was on Ancestry. I found my marriage certificate. I got divorced 25 years ago. I don't even have a copy of that marriage certificate. And he talked about going to cemeteries, going to the Library of Congress to track some of these people down, and now he was able to find more through Ancestry. And to your point, we sat together and talked about who was in, who wasn't in, why he made those choices based on cemeteries and Library of Congress in conjunction with your records. My side mirrors what you say the vision is. What, from a business side, happened to get there? You landed on something really important that does epitomize what is unique about Ancestry.
First, sounds like I need to get you to subscribe to Ancestry. I can't let all that just lapse with your dad. And then importantly, what you said there is the product vision, all the stories that you and your father talked about, that natural interaction, all those stories in the coming years, I want preserved on Ancestry to fulfill our mission. When there's a photo put in front of you and he started telling you about who's in the photo, all of that rich content, one preserved and stored and shared and discoverable by other people on Ancestry. But this is a great example. of the way that we did the mission and the way the prior mission was developed. So prior mission was developed by hiring an agency in San Francisco, paying them a $2 fee to interview employees, workshop, spend time. And gosh, we came up with that mission statement that meant nothing, right? This one, internally, 30 days, somebody on the executive team who I work with and knows me well, I said, hey, let's do this quick. Let's do this internally. Let's get a half a dozen people together and let's workshop it and let's lock it up. And people loved doing it. So it's organic. People naturally feel passionate about it. And the week we rolled it out, everybody just was like, yeah, I thought that was our mission for the past 40 years, right? It was just so obvious and so, again, organic that everybody rallied behind it. And now it is the focus of the company. We do M&A. We use the mission statement as the first screen for evaluating the company. When we think around our product roadmap, how does it fit within the mission statement? And we do take an elastic view of it, but gosh, that is the driving force, the center of gravity as we drive the company forward.
So let's now shift slightly as you drive the company forward. AI is everywhere. So Ancestry used AI to enhance human understanding rather than replace it. So thinking me sitting with my dad, how do you think about embedding it ethically and strategically from the outset?
We use AI to take all the stories that you just talked about with you and your dad. What we want to do is preserve that. And then you can imagine a world with using AI, we could create, if you want a 60-second podcast, if you want a 30-minute long-form video, incorporate all the documents that y'all referenced and turn that into something that's meaningful. Like your highly personalized marine TV show. It's too expensive, but we could do that today. And so we are using AI to make our mission statement come to life and deliver for our customers. And so we've been using it to digitize records for years. 1940 census took us, gosh, 9 months. I forget how many hundreds of thousands, if not millions of dollars. The 1950 census, 9 days. AI, just amazing. And so we have billions and billions of records, most of which is exclusive, 65% of it's exclusive to us. And we're using AI to give you the story I started with, take the draft card and turn that into a story that incorporates the picture of the war buddies, the picture of serving overseas, and all the context about my grandfather, put that into one story.
So that was your grandfather, the draft card image?
Yeah, that's actually what got me to move from New York to Utah, is that I found my grand. I had been living in Lower Manhattan, and I found his draft card. And as it turned out, he too was living in Lower Manhattan. I was like, gosh, I never knew this about him. I grew up with him. It's about finding out more context, this tapestry of who we are, and finding out more about people. So I've now found more records. I just found a record around an uncle who served in World War II, and I found his firsthand account. He was wounded in World War II. He was on patrol in Germany, or in France rather, wounded in action. I found his firsthand account from that action that got him his Purple Heart.
Wow.
And so back to your AI story. So that is 2 pages in script, hard to read, but really rich. It's a firsthand account of a combat interaction, where somebody was actually killed in action, he was wounded. Now we take that using AI and turn it into a 60-second podcast with emotion, story arc. It's pretty cool. And really, back to our mission, personal stories, that is as storytelling as you get.
So did he record the 60-second podcast?
No. What he did is in the 40s, write this out. This was his submission for Purple. We then found the paper record, digitized the paper record, and AI takes over and takes that digital image, converts the handwritten script into actual text, and then further turned it into a podcast. And so back to how we're using AI, like that's a great example. We're not going to make believe we have his voice on file. We don't. So it's clear that it's not his voice, but it is his authentic story. And back to some of the people that helped shape my business career, that's where Martha was great. Martha Stewart is authentic as it gets. Like, we would shoot a TV show, she'd be cooking or ironing, whatever she was doing, it cut to commercial break, she would keep doing it. She wasn't just doing it for the cameras. That was her being authentic and who she is. And so that's our AI vision, is, again, grounded in authenticity.
And so how do you then put guardrails to it? Because I know some people are incredibly excited about AI and the things it will do, and yet it can also still make things up. So how do you create the guardrails, which I assume you have done with great rigor, so that people's history doesn't include Shrek walking across the screen or something?
That is important to us. And so whether we're going to create a video, which is on the roadmap for the future, or a podcast, which is live today, an audio story, we have put parameters in to only use the source material that we provided. Right. So not make up a story from cloth. So it is going to use the immigration record that we have. It'll use a draft guard. It'll use content that we are feeding it to provide this highly curated, highly personal narrative about your ancestor. We're not trying to make your ancestor come alive. We say we're not trying to make dead ancestors dance. We are, again, being authentic with the story.
Beautiful. Thank you. I love that the parameters then are the content we provided. You don't get to make stuff up.
Yep. Including it could come from the customer, UGC, user-generated content, user-generated photos, very important.
So all of this work that you've done on helping people create their stories, how does that influence how you lead and the legacy that you're choosing to create for yourself and the company?
Legacy is a big question. My son, who's now in college, I remember when he was in high school, sometimes your kids ask you those interview questions and then it just stumps you. And I'll never forget, he asked me that question and it stumped me. Listen, I do ultimately go back to where I started, my mother as a customer, my neighbors as a customer, my family as a customer. I want them to want to renew Ancestry because they are loving the service, not liking, but loving what we're doing, the new products, loving the content, loving the stories, and they want to share it with people. I guess my legacy would be, I want more people to be loving Ancestry, to be loving the product. Nothing can make me prouder if we accomplish that.
Your retention metrics are unusually strong. So what leadership behaviors and decisions have contributed most to long-term loyalty? And one of the things I heard was moving from a vision that was created by an external expert to genuinely working with the people who've been delivering these stories for 40 years, working with the folks who are engaging with building document repositories and connecting them to humans.
Let's start with employees. Back earlier, I had said I asked the employees, some engineers, to take down some of these features that we've built over the past 3 years, and they did it over a weekend. That's because they really rallied around the mission. They're passionate about what we do, and keeping people focused on our mission really is a North Star, is centering and motivates people. And Ancestry is also one of those sort of big, small companies where product manager and engineer, customer service representative can do something, could create a new feature that's live on the site relatively quickly. More than most companies, their employees are touching our customers frequently. So we have eliminated some management layers to do more of that, to bring our employees closer to management, closer to me, and closer to our customers. And on our customer side, family history is something that people get passionate about. I'm sure your dad did it for many years. It's like gardening. It's a hobby you pick up and don't put down. And so long as we are keeping up our end of the bargain, innovating, bringing more content, improving the core functionality, customers are going to keep subscribing.
That passion for family history, that rolls through our society, creates of a web of connection that we wouldn't have otherwise had. Is that part of your why you do this?
Part of my why, if you know that your parents survived the Depression, lived through World War II, served in Vietnam, whatever their hurdle was, they got through it. And so when kids realize, gosh, they had a tough time, they got through it, it helps them get through whatever struggle they're going through. There is meaning beyond just preserving the stories that drives me, that drives the company.
How do we help them better understand that they come from sturdy people?
I grew up with a grandmother who was very quiet, and she was a Holocaust survivor. And that's all I knew, and she didn't talk about it. But think of a relatively petite, quiet woman with an Eastern European accent. So fast forward, I join Ancestry, and I've always wanted to learn more about who she was, where she came from, what was her story. And part of what we do at Ancestry is digitize at-risk records or records that wouldn't be otherwise digitized, and we make them available for free. So we digitize Holocaust records, spending millions of dollars digitizing list of prisoners that were in the Holocaust and survived the Holocaust, and give it back to a museum so they could show it to their constituents. So I actually found the prison roster from Auschwitz, where my grandmother was. I found a letter showing that there were experiments done on her. I found the letter of when she was put into a ghetto, put into a camp, put into forced labor. And then I found out that she was actually previously married before the war. Her husband was murdered in the war. She didn't know that. She spent years looking for him. And then she left Europe and moved to the U.S. She actually somehow, I don't know the answer to this, she moved all the way to L.A. So here's a petite woman, knows nobody in the U.S., doesn't speak the language, lands in New York, gets to L.A., back to New York, gets reparations from the German government, at some point marries my grandfather. It was my grandfather's second marriage as well, but the only grandmother that I had known. And I knew none of this.
Wow.
And talk about a survival story. And so now that story is preserved. I tell it to my family. I tell it to my kids. You know, that's meaningful.
As you say that, it just makes me want to cry. Having spent time with Holocaust survivors to understand what they experienced. And it's so different from our lives and the things that we are distressed by.
Exactly. That, and knowing those stories and passing them down does make you stronger.
And also, hopefully, we learn to not repeat the most horrendous of human cruelty. Yeah.
Yes, indeed.
So let's shift gears again. Let's go to looking ahead. What innovations are most exciting to you? You are relatively new as a CEO. So what is on the roadmap for you? What will we say about you in some number of years?
Yeah. So yes, new as CEO, took over just over a year ago, but not new to Ancestry. I've been at Ancestry 17 years. I think it'd be an understatement to say I hit the ground running, meaning I had a vision, a point of view, mission statement for where we want to take the company. And so we've been moving fast and we're just going to move faster. I gave you a little flavor in the mission statement about family stories, but that's the direction. And so AI is amazing in what it can unlock in terms of storytelling. I'll give you an example. These Revolutionary War pension files. So it's pensions from those soldiers that served in the Revolutionary War. So we digitized this 20 years ago. Just a couple of weeks ago, in advance of a big genealogy conference, we digitized it using AI. So imagine what it looked like, a record from 250 years ago, handwritten script with a quill and ink and hard to read, and just you could digitize maybe one name. AI just read all of it. Right. And so now we 10x'd the number of names. And now all of a sudden you're finding out not just the primary soldier, but any witness. Those names are also found. The widow, widower, all these names are now discoverable, searchable, in this file. And the next step is to take this file, which can be 10, 12 pages long, and turn it into a story. Because in there are all the battles, everything that the soldier witnessed, what they did, whether they were wounded. I just read one, the soldier was shot in the head, disfigured, but survived and lived into his 80s. Just really neat stories. And so you could see a world where AI is first going to find this record that was never discoverable, then turn it into a story. Today, that's an audio story. In the future, that can be a really emotional video story. Maybe there's a photograph we could weave in what we know what the uniforms looked like back then. Maybe we knew where they lived, and you could trace the land over time, the house over time. So we're going to turn it into a storytelling product that people want to use and share.
How do you prepare your teams, the humans, build the culture, and navigate the technology?
We take a step back and start again with the customer. Our customers aren't subscribing to Ancestry for AI or for technology. They're subscribing because they want a really neat story and they want to learn about their family history. And so we're starting with a product vision, and then technology is behind the scenes making all of that come to life. So technology, AI, is in service of the customer experience. We don't want it to be the other way around where we're showing customers, hey, here's some really neat technology, come check it out. That's not the way we're orienting. It's the reverse, where customer first, customer serves it. So one of the things we did after the mission, we did our culture statement, which we just didn't have one. So passion for the customer. And then the next couple of words are curiosity, candor, and collaboration. We want people to be very candid with each other. We do 360 feedbacks on each other. I did mine and published mine with my entire staff, so fully transparent, but to instill this culture of transparency. And again, if people could ask questions and be candid with each other, I was totally candid with my goals, with my feedback that included feedback from the board. And again, driving the right culture that is looking to innovate around the culture, that is looking to be collaborative, and that is looking to be curious, meaning ask lots of questions. What do customers want? What are they looking for? What can we actually provide? Is how we're building the right platforms.
Thank you for sharing the personal example, because lots of leaders say, I want you to be transparent, but there isn't the I want me to be transparent part. It's the rest of you people can do a 360 and share with me. So modeling that as the top of the house sets a very different tone than I'm going to pick my leaders who are struggling, do a 360 and have them report it to me.
Well, first, all of us, everybody, C-suite did it, which has been very helpful because then people understand why I'm focused on improving certain areas. It's made my life easier. I think it's made the company better. It's certainly made running the company better.
So it sounds like you're also very data focused. How do you use data to drive improving the culture, improving the products?
Yeah, so we do employee surveys, we do customer surveys all the time, and we track in customer engagement with a variety of metrics. And I have this dashboard that I look at every Monday that sort of tracks how customers are engaging with the site. But listen, it's two things. It's not just the data. I was just at our largest genealogy conference talking to customers. I get customer calls sent to me. So I have about an hour commute into the office each way. And so I'll play the customer calls and listen to the customer feedback. And customers have some very basic challenges from logging into the site to wanting better search. So I'll listen to these customer calls, which is sometimes painfully frustrating because you just want to jump in and help them, but you can't. It's this recorded phone call. So I'll listen to customer feedback. But then I'll also look at the data to see how many customers are having that specific problem, how many customers are having a problem logging in, or how many customers are having a problem with search. So it's those two, and then trying to recognize a pattern among the two, and then bring that to our engineering and product team to improve the experience. We always try and marry that in with some qualitative, direct consumer feedback.
Yeah, because I can imagine there's a demographic that's going to be more likely to call, and there's a demographic that's going to be less likely to call.
And then that, by the way, goes for employee feedback. we'll do an employee survey very consistently twice a year, and you have the data score, and then you have qualitative feedback.
What kind of behaviors are you looking for from your direct leadership team over the next couple of years?
Focus. I want our leaders to use the product, but stay focused and not get distracted by 10 different growth ideas. Let's do 3 ideas and do them really well and execute them really well. I have noticed with AI, all of a sudden everyone has, and I get it, it's very exciting, loads of ideas on how this could change how we do contracts, how this could change how we do search, digitize material, create new ad campaigns, loads of ideas. I want us to focus and let's pick a handful of things and do those things well. And after we do those, let's then expand beyond that and keep rolling it out. But I don't want everybody just to roll us through the organization and change the way we're doing every initiative.
I hear you, because I'm inflicting pain on all of us trying to do things differently. So in the spirit of innovating leadership and co-creating our future, what's one leadership choice you believe senior leaders or board should make in the next 30 days? And what system or practice must be put in place for that choice to stick?
I would actually go back to what I said. I'll go back to focus. I think people are losing focus, and staying focused on your mission, staying focused on 3 specific goals, and then holding yourself accountable, reviewing those every month in a systemized cadence of operational reviews is key. And then you see progress week on week, day on day, and you can knock out one of those goals. And once you knock out one of the 3, let's bring another one in. But focus, 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 so important. Focus in a boardroom, focus on agenda, focus on a few key priorities. That's what I'm doing this year. That's what I did last year.
And it's obviously delivered really strong results. So if I learn from you, I need to focus.
Center, yes. And do some yoga.
I do a lot of yoga. You can't imagine what my team would be experiencing if I didn't do yoga every day. It would be bad. Thank you, Howard, for sharing the depth of personal stories as well as business systems and experiences. How would listeners stay on top of what's unfolding at Ancestry?
That's a great question. I would use Ancestry as the best way. Then you'll get the full customer experience, including all of our email and site updates. And I'm on LinkedIn, right? I'll try to offer some insights. I had a very memorable post that people reacted to about my grandmother's Holocaust story. So sharing those stories is really personally impactful and meaningful to me. So yeah, follow us on Ancestry. You could catch me on LinkedIn, and I'm floating around the universe.
Beautiful. Thank you. And to our listeners, thank you for joining us and listening to Howard's fabulous insights. Please like us, share this podcast and comment on it, and join Ancestry.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Hi there, this is Morgan James. Every album represents a step in an artist's journey. Hello, music lovers. I'm inviting you to listen to Music Journeys with Mike Foley. Mike mixes music and conversation with artists to share what informed and inspired their latest project, how the love of music began, what music means to them, and so much more. We've chatted about 3 of my projects, the most recent being Soul Remains the Same, a soul album of songs you would never expect. You can always expect the perfect combination of music and stories on Music Journeys. The show airs Saturday afternoons at 3:30 on WCBE. Recent episodes are available on the major podcast platforms and the WCBE app. To meet and hear more from all the musicians featured since its start in 2018, including me, to be the first to be featured 3 times on the show, look for Music Journeys on WCBE's podcast experience at WCBE.com.
Do you love amazing stories? I know I do. I'm Michael Kent, and every week on my show, we examine something from history that's so unbelievable it sounds made up, but is 100% verifiably true. It's a podcast called The Internet Says It's True, and there are hundreds of episodes to choose from. For example, did you know the story of how Leonard Nimoy came up with Live Long and Prosper for Star Trek? Or how Colombia is dealing with a hippo problem that goes back directly to Pablo Escobar? Or one of my favorite stories, a man figured out that a nondescript Winnebago being auctioned online was actually an important part of space exploration history. These are all stories from The Internet Says It's True. Listening to a podcast has never been easier. You can listen through any popular podcast app, through the NPR app, or download the fantastic new WCBE app, click the Podcasts tab, and look for The Internet Says It's True with Michael Kent. You'll have so many stories up your sleeve, you'll feel like the smartest person in the room, especially if you're home alone.